Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 37. Village life was a quiet life, and I wasn't sad about it. I'd had to share my time, my space, and Ashley with so many other people over the years, and now we got to just be us. No audience, no one else's opinions, no trying to find a good time so, you know, you don't get overheard by the rest of the household. Our tiny little bungalow had everything I needed in it. And I was loving the lack of stairs too. When you move from a three-story house to a place with just one large step out of the back door, it's a good time. I did still, however, manage to fall out of said back door. And aside from that weekend with a sprained ankle, when Ashley was a very attentive nurse, I'd become quite the domestic technician. I mean, I'm no housewife, clearly, and my stay-at-home dad had coined this particular phrase, and I'd become it myself, a domestic technician. And I kind of found I had the time and space for all sorts of things I hadn't done in years, like letter writing, for example, to my great aunt. Since leaving university, my letters had become more sporadic, but my great aunt had been busy herself, it seemed, finding a second lust for life years after my great uncle had passed away. Mum would tell me of gentlemen friends trying to woo and court my great aunt. So I wrote to her to tell her of our new address and all the changes that had been going on. It was always a proud moment not to have to censor the information I shared in my letter. Obviously, early doors, my parents had worried about the reaction in the wider extended family. But they didn't ask me to hide anything, just to be as respectful as possible if people found it difficult. I never took that for granted as I told my great aunt about my life with Ashley. In fact, the only part that my great aunt had a problem with was remembering Ashley's name. But she was consistent in her error, so you've got to give her that. In the village, they were remembering our names and, continuing to make small talk with us. It was such a typical little English village, and very conservative to boot. You couldn't help but feel just a little uneasy as our politics gave birth to the UKIP party, and in 2014 they were very busy blaming us gays for all of the flooding. And I don't know what they mean, because we only ever did the rain dances in the summer, so it couldn't possibly have been us, not this winter. Away from so-called legitimate politics, Facebook feeds started to show the real arse of our country as the Britain First group memed their way into the Europe conversation, spreading misinformation and really setting the tone for the discussion ahead. Already you were starting to have to unfriend folks who turned these discussions into personal attacks or shared an opinion that shows they've never taken a moment to think how it might affect anyone who wasn't like them. It felt like forever since I'd been attacked over my presentation, and suddenly my stereotypical look was offensive again. There were a few people in my life that got that I was gay, for God's sake, but, you know, did I really have to look it? It baffles me, these people, who are often on the periphery of my life, demanding that I tone myself down because they can't look at me without descending into a spiral of horrific gay thoughts. Babes, I won't change for my own mother. Why the fuck am I going to change for your snowflake self? Get a grip. You know, that thought has gotten me through a bunch of those type of altercations. My wonderful, amazing parents are about the only people in the world I feel I owe something to, and that I am happy to check myself for, to a point. And even for these two people who are my absolute world, there is only so far I can compromise. So Gary, you see, you and your sensitive eyes don't really stand a chance. I'd love for you not to look so much like a stereotypical England football fan. For you to realise that you and your stereotypical appearance makes me think of violent, racist, xenophobic, homophobic and transphobic people. That your British bulldog sort of attitude disgusts me as much as the awful tattoo of it we get to see daily on your hairy forearms. Gary, you're an Umbro tattoo away from being the real deal of a man, and honestly, everything about you offends me. But if I said that to you, you wouldn't cry, would you, Gary? No, you'd just take it out on one of us instead. Because all our problems, they're nothing to do with you, are they, Gary? No, couldn't possibly be your fault. You're a perfect specimen of the straight white English man, aren't you? If only there were more of you, eh, Gary? Imagine how much standing around moaning we could get done. I really, really hope you're out there right now, Gary, picking fruit or driving a lorry. Your country needs you. So yeah, village life, bit conservative and quite quiet, and I might have had a fair bit of free time on my hands to argue with folks on the internet. And if I wasn't arguing with folks on the internet, I had spent hours in the garage trying to stack our stuff to avoid the holes in the roof. I got mildly obsessed with selling stuff on eBay. My timing was a bit poor on that one. Just as I was due to have to post out some 15 to 20 parcels, the village saw the first excitement that had happened since we'd been there. The post office was on fire. We watched from our bungalow window 50 foot across the street. Drew a bigger crowd than bonfire night. But all I could think was, I hope they reopen soon. So I'll have to take my snowboard into town all wrapped up. I'm going to look dead silly. Ashley's concerns were more shop-related. She'd settled into her own routines, essentially working ridiculously long hours, driving hundreds of miles a day, and she'd come home and keep going for a bit, straight to the gym or pole dancing. But then, once she's home, it's like she goes into standby mode or autopilot. She'd pop across to the shop, grab a bottle of wine, and finish it most nights. Now, I'm a pretty useless drinker, and I cannot and do not want to handle the hangovers. They just don't seem worth it. But hungover or not, Ashley never misses a beat. She's always up and out and at her desk the next day, smashing her targets still. But me? I'm just getting an hour or two of her company at best before she passes out asleep on the sofa. My go-to-bed routine becomes trying to coax Ashley to wake up. And, well, she already sleeps like the dead before the bottle of wine. I can't always manage to convince her to come to bed too. It's a good job that £10 sofa turned out to be so damn comfortable. Eventually she'd wake up and find her way to bed. It wasn't a big deal to me, or it didn't seem like one. You know, after all, my parents had regularly shared a bottle of wine to unwind at the end of the day, and, you know, everybody did it. So it was more of an annoyance than a problem. And I turned those annoying moments into a funny anecdote that actually belied how lonely it was to sit on the sofa in this new home, in this new town, and have the only person you're connected to only be conscious for 2 hours of an evening. But I got why Ashley needed to unwind. Like, her job was non-stop sales pressure, and she had to deliver on that too, and she's running two households and it's stressful, and if I'm brutally honest, I'm not a huge amount of help. Like, life admin is my kryptonite. Those letters that show up with their little plastic windows, oh, I hate them. If there was any area of my life I wish I hadn't rebelled against, it's taking up my parents' approach to life admin and financial responsibility. I didn't get it. I got their combined short-sightedness, but not their fiscal literacy. As much as I wasn't much help, there actually wasn't much I could do. Ashley kept it mostly under wraps, and I think she took it on herself because she knew I hated dealing with it, but also she liked to be in control, and it was her house and her independence and her money at stake after all. Having her big brother there at the old house was supposed to take some of the pressure off, but instead of being a massive help, he was a massive pain in the arse. He was a drain, barely paying his own rent and being such a delight to live with that rooms became harder and harder to rent out. Not to mention, he was very picky about the company he kept for a man who wasn't paying his way and had been in prison and lived with rats, to be honest. Ashley started to talk about selling up, and there was a lot to think about with all of that. And cue the power of the mother. Now, as you guys can imagine, I'm pretty close with my parents. There might be a couple of hundred miles between us, which actually does really help us, by the way, but we talk almost daily. As I've gotten older, they've become, dare I say it, friends. Albeit friends who will absolutely put me in my place and don't appreciate my use of bad language. We talk very openly these days. It's taken time, but they now know what's going on in my life, even between Ash and I. My mum decides she fancies a visit. She wants to come and see where we've gone to live. And she's decided to abandon my dad to fend for himself for the weekend. I say abandon. She's put every single meal he'll need in the freezer ready for him and written him a detailed set of instructions on how to feed himself the way he likes it. My dad has a vast array of talents and skills. Operating an oven or a microwave, not on that list. Not so much. Hanging out with my mum for a weekend, like she was a friend who'd come to visit, was kind of surreal, but brilliant fun. We went for a country walk to explore the lovely area that we lived in, and, well, it ended up being quite the trek, thanks to one or two unsure turns on my behalf. Ashley is a musicals person, as you possibly gathered. This means she often breaks into song and sometimes accompanying dance routine, no matter her surroundings, down Tesco's or right now in the middle of the English countryside. I'm used to it, often find it adorable and endearing, sometimes a little much, but you know, it's an Ashley thing. My mum has only experienced brief moments of this, and it turns out about an hour is her limit. Ashley, you're wonderful, but if you don't stop singing, I will push you in the river, warns my mum. I can't stop laughing, and Ashley hasn't realised she's been doing it. She takes it with good grace, and my mum does tell her she has a wonderful voice, which is true, but she'd probably appreciate it more if someone hadn't just taken her on a 7-mile route march, looking quite pointedly at me. That wrong turn was going to cost me in the pub later. And it wasn't just dinner that cost me, because we'd worked up quite the appetite. The conversation got very serious. Now, my mum is a great listener, and she gives very practical and sensible advice. And she's got Ashley talking through her options. I go to the bar for another round, and I'm loving looking over and seeing my mum and my fiancé deep in conversation, getting on like a house on fire. I head back to the table in time to hear my mum telling Ashley how to maximise her money and her investments, and how to deal with the house sale and what she can do next and what the best ways are to protect her money and her assets from the likes of me. Hold up. Say what now, mum? And she's explaining to us how we need to set things up so that if we do break up, nobody gets anything that wasn't theirs. And I know she's right, because Ashley and I have only ever made verbal agreements, and Ashley hasn't actually taken any steps herself. And my mum talks her through all of this as much as she can. And I couldn't love her any more, because she's absolutely right to do this. And no one else was in a position to explain this stuff to Ashley. And I've never wanted anything other than Ashley out of this situation, and to be wherever it is that she is. I can see how much better Ashley feels for just having someone to talk this stuff through with. Maybe I could at least learn to listen better and find out how to support her while she's dealing with all of this stuff for us. Ashley agrees, and sometimes she does. She just needs to say it out loud or to know that I understand the situation she's dealing with better. By the time my mum heads home, I can see Ashley's shoulders relaxing a little bit. She's a woman with a plan now. My mum just better hope we don't break up, because otherwise Ashley's going to have protected herself so well. I shall be back in the spare room, and then she'll be sorry about her wise, wise words. Talking of being sorry, I was about to be very, very sorry about one particular series of bad life choices. Well, actually, I was about to be more than a little bit sorry. You see, there's something I haven't told you. Whilst I was genetically blessed with a socially acceptable standard of female body, there are one or two minor faults with the system. I've mentioned my lack of 20/20 vision. I mean, no bother. I was very happy to learn that guys don't make passes at girls who wear glasses, so all's good. What I haven't mentioned is my utterly rubbish teeth. They are worse than the stereotypical bad Brit teeth. I mean, these buggers are made out of candy floss or something. And there was always a problem with them while I was growing up. I mean, okay, first up, I dived into the wrong end of a swimming pool and I may have used my face to stop. And my two front teeth, they did not survive that. Snapped them clean off. And let me tell you, getting those rebuilt smarted just a little bit. And then it turned out I had too many teeth for my mouth. So many, in fact, that one of them has randomly decided to grow across the roof of my mouth. So there I am, having major dental surgery at the age of 15. 8 or more teeth out, 20 plus stitches in my mouth. Of course, I didn't escape the seemingly obligatory braces phase. You know, there I was, a Lego Bob and braces, age 16. Oh, a beauty I was. What a sight. Eventually it was all done with after I'd suffered through some seriously traumatic fillings and other dental treatment. I turned 18 and no one could make me go to the dentist. So I didn't. And by the next time I tried to go, it wasn't just my fear of the dentist, it was my fear of the bill I had to deal with too. So I met Ashley just before I turned 25. And my teeth were okay then. I mean, they weren't great, you wouldn't have wanted them, but you'd definitely have seen worse. And I continued to be a dentist dodger as the years went by. My rubbish teeth could not cope with my addiction to energy drinks or my smoking. And bit by bit, they started to crumble and flake away. They looked terrible, but they didn't hurt. And my fears totally overrode my vanity. I'd rather have these dodgy teeth than sit in that dentist chair again. I actually lost teeth. I had to be careful about how I ate and what I ate. And still, I didn't do anything. The situation got so bad that my parents and Ashley offered to cover the costs, but the finances were just a useful excuse or cover for my absolute fear. I went to a couple of the initial consultations they set up over the years. I bottled the first one before I even got in the waiting room. I made it into the chair for the second one, but shut it down the moment he went near my mouth with his tiny little metal hook. All the while, my heart is hammering away, sweating bullets. I am borderline ready to pass out, and even Ashley being there didn't help. So I tried to do it myself, on the quiet. You know, set up the appointment and went alone. I told nobody. I figured that way if I bottle it, I can't be embarrassed about it. Nobody knew in the first place. I got in the door. And actually the dentist seemed okay after a little bit of a chat. So I got in the chair. And oh my God, he reacted like a mechanic in one of those dodgy backstreet garages who was looking to gouge you for every penny. He practically did that intake of breath. Oh, this is going to be expensive. He started listing all of the work I was going to need and how difficult it would be and how long it was going to take and how it wasn't going to be cheap and how I'd really need to commit to the process and make some massive changes in my life. All of this he reeled off with his gloved fingers in my mouth. He listened to a word I'd said about how scared I was and what my fears were. He just saw some serious profit. I left as quickly as you can when somebody has you tipped back and your chest is being used like a handy tray. I looked at the teeth situation like I looked at any other situation. Was I willing to do what was necessary to change the situation? Because if the answer to that is no, then you have to find a way to accept it. The price of not having shit teeth was too high for me to pay. So as always, I just did my best with what I had. There is no doubt it affected my confidence, chipped away at it slowly. And as my teeth fell apart, my face changed shape. I never realised how much your teeth are a part of that. I learnt to smile with my mouth shut. I learnt to talk and not expose my upper teeth, which were now nothing but nubs. I have no idea how Ashley dealt with it, how she could look at me, how she could still fancy me, how she could still be okay with being seen with me. But she did, and she got why I couldn't face my fears. I mean, let's be honest, no one likes the dentist, including Ashley. However, she'd seen the state of me on more than one occasion, in or around a dentist, just losing my shit. She never pushed, but she was right there if I just needed that backup, if I needed someone, if I decided to do something about it. I never made that decision. I ignored it until the decision was made for me. And it was pain that made that decision. And it started out fairly small. The basic sort of level of painkillers, they helped. I just was more careful about what I ate and how I ate it. I picked my food types very carefully. By softness, that helped. The pain got worse and I upgraded my painkillers to codeine. I kept taking them, ignoring all of the addiction warnings, ignoring all of the do not use for more than 3 days without seeking help. I didn't seek help. I just made sure to rotate my buying habits between different pharmacies, trying to avoid the same member of staff serving me twice. Please, whatever you do, don't do this. I was driving around under the influence, albeit of legal drugs. I'm lucky I didn't cause any accidents or disasters while I numb myself to the ever-growing pain in my head. I was putting everyone else in danger rather than dealing with my own shit. But of course, I didn't see it like that then. I was just trying to get through each day in as little pain as possible. And then finally, all the painkillers in the world couldn't help me. 6+ years of true neglect was kicking in. I was in so much pain, I was begging Ashley just to punch me in the face, to slam a door on my head. At one point, I remember lying on the floor, doubled over, telling her I'd do anything to make it stop. Even go to a dentist, Ashley asked me at 1:30 in the morning. Even that I managed to mumble. 9 hours later, I was in a hospital-level dental place. We're sat in the waiting room, and my fear is making the pain so much worse. I'm trying to distract myself. I'm trying to calm myself down. I'm looking around the room. And every other patient in there has something in common. They've all got some sort of disability. The lad opposite me, he's got Down syndrome, just like my cousin, and he's reassured me that they're much nicer here. I don't need to worry. And God, I could have hugged him because I needed to hear that, right? And then all of a sudden, I'm back in a bloody dentist chair again, with that awful light in your eyes. You know, lying back and feeling so damn vulnerable. I've been crying for hours. I can't stop. But the dentist, he takes his time. He settles me in. He's good, this one. I'm breathing better. He's giving me some control. He's explaining every option. He is answering every question I have. There's no coddling, mind you. He is very clear about how bad things are. And he is very upfront about the potential pain levels and the ways we can mitigate it. I leave that chair with one less tooth and a referral back to him and an epic course of antibiotics. My reassuring buddy is leaving at the same time as me, and I am proud as anything to be able to tell him that he was right. They are much nicer here. He high-fives me and says, "See you next time." Now he leaves and I go back in. You see, I'd been given the referral, but I'd planned on walking out to, you know, to think about it. And, well, we all knew I wasn't really going to think about it. I was probably just going to avoid it all again. But I realised I wasn't going to be able to see him next time if I hadn't booked in. Ashley just squeezed the hell out of me as I booked that next appointment to start dealing with this. Somehow, I'd ended up at this specialist dental wing that was set up for anyone who couldn't deal with the standard dental practice. From my buddy with Down syndrome to the fella I met with cerebral palsy who told me that most dentists don't duck quick enough for him, to the likes of me who just couldn't get their shit together and face their fears without a ton of help. You know, I was still terrified, but I was hopeful. Because I did want to be able to smile again, especially if we ever did get round to that wedding. And it got me thinking, you know, what else was I capable of doing? You know, kind of facing that down and all the support that I'd gotten from everybody along the way was a massive confidence boost. And yeah, my proper job was going all right, but it was boring me to death. And I was constantly searching for some sort of outlet to fill the time and make me feel like I was doing something. I tried my hand at creative writing, a story for young adults competition. Of course, a kick-ass girl was my main character, obviously. I don't think it did very well, but it was nice having a go at it. And after another unsuccessful trip to the barber's and finding another unwelcoming shop, I had gone full DIY barber. And I'll be honest, it helped that the man bun was in style, because that is a fairly easy cut that almost anyone can do. It always tickles me that I won't grow my hair unless it's for a masculine style reason. I mean, painting your nails is girly. Except now that the lads do it, all right, maybe I will give it a go. Buy a floral shirt from the women's section? Hell no. I'm having flashbacks of being forced into Laura Ashley dresses all over again. But a floral shirt from the men's section? I'm interested. I like it. I might try it. Maybe I'd wear it. You know, as long as you make it masculine or make it a bit butch, then I'll consider it. I mean, I'm just going to leave it at kilt versus skirt. That's all I'm going to say. It turned out, though, I was loving cutting my own hair more and more. And I got a lot of compliments on it. And it got me thinking. You know, over the years, I've long pondered the idea of being a barber. So I stopped pondering. And I found a course. I requested day release from work to attend this barbering course, and they approved it. I passed all the assessments and interviews, and they accepted me. I was going back to school. Barber life, here I come. September will bring the start of something new. You know, a challenge to keep my mind off my dental dramas and my ever-sleeping fiancé. But first, the summer has a challenge of its own, and we have to get the house ready for sale. Now, I can't help Ashley with the admin and the spreadsheets, but home improvements? Let me fetch my tool belt, babes. I got you. And I spent my summer fixing up the house as best I can. I polyfiller and paint and repaint. I clean and I clean and I clean some more. Inside, outside, windows and gutters. I lose an entire week reclaiming a path out to our absurd garden that could only be accessed via the woods. I lose another week finding the garden under the English jungle that's emerged. By the time I'm done with it, we almost don't want to sell it. Our tiny bungalow would fit in our old living room. I think we're both missing some of the space we used to have. We agree, as soon as this place sells, we'll find somewhere with a little more room for us all. You know, somewhere I could swing Gucci if I really wanted to. All right, you lovely folks, how's things? I hope you are all kinds of good. I am loving life right now, and I am very excited. I am off to pick and carve my first ever pumpkin today. So keep an eye on my Insta. I might show you my efforts. So the show has officially hit 10,000 plays. I am so, so grateful to you. Thank you so much. Keep sharing it. Keep telling people about it. I love you guys for it. I couldn't be more grateful. But I'm not stopping. There is still a whole heap to come. And if you've been enjoying the show, please consider donating or subscribing. It all goes towards helping cover the costs of making the show, and it helps to keep it ad-free. So you can subscribe at ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/well-established-lesbian, or you can find the link on my Insta bio at well-established-lesbian. If you subscribe for like £1 a month, that's like 25p an episode. I'm not sure you can even buy a Freddo for that price anymore, but I will. I'll find out for you. It shall be my mission this week. Yours, if you choose to accept it, is to be more awesome. I dare you. I'll see you next week.